for those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is The God Journey. Well, I did ask for it, and I got it. I got loads of email, blog comments, Facebook notices as people are processing the loneliness of this journey and how it sorts out some good thoughts, some struggles, and we're going to try and sort some of that out today. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. Welcome to this edition of The God Journey. Before we get into that, I want to just talk about something we've added to the website this week. We add it every year, but we finally got it in for 2013. There's a gentleman who just out of his goodness of his heart volunteers, but every year sends me an RSS feed for the previous year's podcast so that you can listen to them, put them on your iPhone, iPod, whatever. Not really sure how this works because I've never done it, but for those of you that are into that and that the RSS feed is there, and if you go to it, it'll just download all of last year's podcasts into your MP3 player and you can take it from there. Back to some of the loneliness stuff. We got a lot of it. And I can't obviously read it all, or that's all we'd do. But I am going to talk through some of this. And what I love about it is like so many things. I think times past, you know, I heard some things about loneliness. This is 20, 25 years ago. I'm going to hear a thing about loneliness, and I'm going to get a sense that maybe that's a problem among people I know. And so then I'm going to prepare a sermon on loneliness, and I'm going to teach it on Sunday morning. And because I've taught about loneliness now, and I've covered the topic just as well as it can possibly be covered, that no one else in the body of Christ will ever have trouble with loneliness again, or they're not following what I told them to do. Man, I am so glad not to be in that space. Even as I read over the stuff on the blog, which all of you can see, it's also a lot that I got personally from people. And as I read over that stuff, you know what? I am so grateful not to be in that space, not to say, oh, here's a pat answer that fixes that. This is all part of our journey. That's why I love that we call this the God Journey. When Brad and I settled on that years ago, I love the fact that this is God's journey in you, and where you're at in this space may be very different from somewhere else is at. And no one's going to have the answer for you. And you might hear things from other people and go, okay, that's interesting. And we're going to talk about a lot of that today. You say, oh, that might work for me. I might give that a shot, or I might try that, or I might whatever. But in all of that, what you're looking for is saying, God, what's next for me? And why am I in this space? First of all, why that? I've had a lot of people say being in the space of being alone for a season was a great healing part of their life. Some have even suggested it's necessary. If you're moving from a conformity-based system where you've got to go with the flow and do what everybody else is doing, and the sermon was given Sunday, like I just said a few minutes ago, so you better do it and get it right, or what? There's nothing else for you. And you're going to move from that and go on a journey with Jesus that's going to be a bit more transforming than that. By definition, you move out of groupthink. And by moving out of groupthink, might you be alone? Might you be with less people around you? And the answer is, yeah, you might be. There might be a season of that. But does that negate God's desire to bring all things together under one head, to bring the body of Christ into unity with each other, to bring us into community, a common unity that with people near us, around us? Is that God's desire for us? I think it is. So we're going to explore some of that. Donna wrote this, and I think it's one of the emails I got that kind of long time back that kind of triggers me. Yeah, let's talk about this some. I've been listening to The God Journey for a while. It's been an encouragement in many ways, and I thank you for this. One thing I've not been able thus far to do on this journey is to actually find the kind of fellowship you repeatedly talk about. Well, I'm certain I'm not the only one. It has remained elusive to me as how I and my husband might actually have contact with other believers when, due to chronic illness and thus being mostly homebound with severe chemical sensitivities, making it all but impossible to be around people, wearing all manner of fragrances, how do we connect with others who have no such limitations? Yeah, that's the first part. If life is normal and people are having a hard time connecting, that's one issue. When you add to that something that makes it more difficult for me to be out and about or connect with people face-to-face, it's more complicated. This from someone who wrote me anonymously says, what happens to people like me, unmarried, out of the system, felt strangled by house church, no car, and feel guilt if I can't make all the functions? Recovering from a debilitating disease, not well enough to get around or not able to care for herself, need a ride to the store, need a phone call to check up, and how do we find people that are part of that with us? Pat wrote this, again, coming back to some of these in a minute, but the podcast touched me the most tender, hurting place in my heart these days. When Wayne spoke of the joy he gets from playing and engaging his grandchildren, when he spoke of how he reads books to Sarah, tears sprung up. Two of the things that have brought greatest joy to me no longer exist in my life: playing with my grandkids, reading to my husband. My husband died suddenly 2 years ago while we were at a family reunion. We've been married over 30 years. My grief deepened when my daughter's family, including two young grandchildren, moved out of the country a mere year later. I'm now very familiar with grief and loneliness as I live alone in a home that was once filled with life and activity. And yet my life is not without joy. It has just taken a big turn and is still trying to settle and accept that what so many call the new normal. Just yesterday, my heart was full of contentment, even joy, when first my son and his girlfriend stopped by. We prepared and ate lunch together, and afterward, two little neighbor girls came over, and we baked and decorated cupcakes. We even broke out and danced in the kitchen at one point. Pangs of guilt still pierced my heart in longing for what I once had, but I'm learning not to be afraid to go with the waves of those emotions, knowing they will pass. I never knew grief and loneliness as I do today, but I have come into a deeper relationship with Abba as I lean into him in this new dance. Pat, thank you. I appreciate what you're sharing. And there are moments like that. You talk about people have chronic illnesses or, you know, recovering from a debilitating disease or surgery, and I'm limited in the kind of people I can have into my life and the way I can engage people. And I love that in times like this. One, I would say to Pat, there needs to be no guilt whatever for having a longing in your heart for what you once had. I just think that's normal. That's not even sinful. To say there was something beautiful in my life and now it's gone and I miss it, that's just part of grief. And there's no guilt in grief. There's just grief. And in the grief, God wants to make himself known to us. He wants to walk us through the pain of it. Now I've got to navigate a new space with God. Is there grief at losing the old space? There is. Oh my gosh, if your spouse can die and there's no space there, then I would say, gosh, probably love wasn't deep. It might have been very broken. I've known some men and women celebrated when their spouse died, grateful to be done with that part of their life that was never a joy. And boy, you don't want that. And so life changes. What I love about Pat's, at some point you move on. You grieve, yes, but there's a new normal. And how do I find joy in that new normal? And how do I let people into that space, even if it's neighbor girls to come and make cupcakes? I just think there's so many things that life can open up to us. And the problem with looking at our life, like I've got this disability now, or I can't do this now, or I can't do this now, is that a lot of people, and I don't know that people who are writing me, as I said, I you know so little about someone that just says, this is my space. And I don't know them, and so I don't know that anything I say is to them specifically. I'm more talking in a wider sense of generality into which God can make himself known. But I hear from a lot of people that want a group in town, want somebody to provide something I can go to and connect with this fellowship and have this fellowship. And if it's in your heart to provide such a thing, provide it. If you can't find it where you are, then the space you crawl into is, okay, God, what do you want to do with me now? What doors do you open? Because you're not going to find a stranger off the street, say, who's going to adjust to your fragrance sensitivities or whatever. They don't know you, and we're going to go down that road. But as people come into your life, people you begin to care about. And I always think affection and love. I know I love someone when I have affection for them. And when I have affection for someone, when they come into my home, whatever limitation they have, whether it's food allergies or if it's fragrance allergies, whatever, we can get that out of our life for a few hours. We can do that on a regular. If we care about someone, we'll do it. But now it's God's to do with all of us. It's not, I can find this group and I'm going to go and everything's going to be better. But God, who is it that you want me walking alongside right now, and how do you bring them into my life? Eve Lorraine, who posts a lot on our blog, and I appreciate her life and I appreciate how she's opening up to that group. She said this, you asked Wayne, so here goes. Loneliness is when my husband doesn't want to speak to me and gets angry if I speak to him. You know, I'll stop right there. There's something there. My goodness, if I was reading that about Sarah, loneliness is my wife who doesn't want to speak to me and gets angry if I speak to her, I'm immediately stopping and saying, something's got to change. My first thought isn't, oh, this is Sarah's fault. I wish she'd get over it. My thought is, what have I done? Many of you heard our story from a year and a half ago, some changes that God was doing in Sarah. And my first response was, man, what did I do to get here? And I don't mean the guilt, blame me, go down that road. It's just, so what have I done? And that was a question I've asked Sarah a lot. What have I done? And what can I do going forward? And I this is not about Eve Lorraine's situation at all, but I've been with a lot of women in various meetings, even stayed in homes where couples have invited me to stay there. And the woman will tell me if she picks me at the airport, whatever, my husband's not, you know, he's not a very good believer. I don't think he's a believer at all. And then in the course of being in that home for a couple of days and engaging that husband in conversation, find out he has a very, very deep spiritual passion. It's just that his wife, who may be on a bit more of a religious bent, has pushed him into a corner where she wants to badger him enough that she doesn't let him have his journey. And so talking about it is too painful. So they stop talking about it, and the wife makes assumptions. I said, this has nothing to do with leave learning. But if this were true for me, we're going to get help. I'm going to get help. I'm going to find a place to say, let's go talk to a counselor. It's downright, when I'm reading here, sounds abusive to me, and I may be misreading it, Eve Lorraine, and if I am, I apologize. But I know people who are caught in these kinds of relationships. Sometimes, yeah, maybe they've done something that's caused it. On the other time, maybe just the person they're married to is a bit abusive. But the answer is, I'm going to ask Jesus to walk me through this. I'm going to get a counselor on it. I'm going to be asking the questions, because life's too short not to live with someone you can engage lovingly. But she concluded with this: life alone is okay, but when Wayne says we are made for community, or God is a God of community, I get unsettled. Maybe community is only for some people, and it's not for me. I am either a very defective person, or this is the life that Jesus has chosen for me. Those are the kinds of statements that freak me out a little, to be honest, because it sets up two ends of a very, very broad spectrum. Either this is true, I'm incredibly defective, or on the other hand, what's true is that God has made me an exception to this life of community. And I hope people who even feel lonely, feel marginalized, feel like there isn't anything there. One, I'd say Eve Lorraine is doing what she can in that she's participated on the blog here for the last few months and is having some conversations with people about these things. And honestly, if that's the only thing you get is online, don't diminish it. Engage it. It's why I provide those kinds of venues for people. I know so many people I've met around the world whose relationships began online. Or relationships began because I showed up for a meeting in their community. They came, met each other, and this great friendship happened simply because they had a connection that came through the internet or my presence in a community. If this is the way you can reach out right now, reach out. I know those people that you can't replace real fellowship with. I get face-to-face is better. We had dinner last night with a friend who's going through a bit of a rough stretch in her journey. And I tell you, there's nothing like the face-to-face stuff. That's true. I get that. At the same time, if it's not there now, I wouldn't assume that God doesn't want it for you. I wouldn't assume that you're lost in it. I'd just say, okay, God, how do we have this conversation and have it with God? Don't hope somebody provides it. Don't hope there's an answer on this podcast that, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to do that from now on. God, why am I in this lonely space? And what I've heard from some, and some that I'll read shortly, you might be in a lonely space because you've just made a big jump out of religion. All the people you know are religious, and there's just no way to have the conversation you want to have with the people you know. And if so, that's just a part of the journey. It may be, and some people have written this on blogs and personal emails to me, that for a while they really needed, they really realized as God was inviting them into greater space, how much they have used people to fill the God hole in their heart. Kent mentioned that. Some of us talk about belonging systems. That there's the belonging, and we promise this, and we all nice and sing songs together. But then over time, you realize this belonging system is really an it. It's not really community. These people don't care about me. If I'm not here tomorrow, they will judge me, not love me. And when you realize that, now you're in a belonging system, and you may miss that. I felt something nostalgic, wonderful there, and how do I replace it somewhere else? But I wouldn't even try and replace it. Just like the woman that lost her husband, grandkids have moved out of the country. You don't replace that. You just turn to God and say, what's next? Who do you want me to walk alongside right now? This stretch of my life may not be as full of X, Y, or Z as the previous set of my life, but I'm gonna walk in this now, and I'm going to see what unfolds. This is a conversation we get to have with God, and it's a conversation we get to have with people who may be, and maybe online, it may be people I know, just saying, you know what, I'm not having the kinds of connections I would like to have. Is it a season God has for you to lose your dependency on people? You need that no matter where you go from here. Dependencies on people to fill up needs in our life are a dead end. It may fill it up for a space, but as soon as somebody doesn't and hurts you, then you get hurt to the core of your being. We get to have fellowship. It's not a matter of we need it, I've got to have it. And so there is a space to grow in God. I think that's a lovely season for people. There may be just limited seasons of just where you might withdraw from that. There may be seasons of when God helps you withdraw from that. There's just the opportunity's not there. And there may be a season when God's saying, okay, I want to stir you up now in this place. There's people I want to bring into your life. And I don't think it helps if our first thought about that is, I need people who are on the God journey. I don't know that if it happens that way, great. Talked to a guy in the UK yesterday by Skype who had that experience. Somebody came to him, they met in this deal, talking about the God journey. The other guy started listening, and man, they got in this conversation and they really enjoyed each other. And that's fabulous. It doesn't always happen. But God knows you, where you are, and what's next for you. And God knows what needs you have. What are those he wants to meet inside himself? And what of those he wants to bring other people into your life? I think to say that maybe some of us weren't made for community, I hope when I talk about God being a God of community and he's inviting you into it, what I'm hoping that does is spur hope in people's hearts. If it spurs a sense of despair or I'm too fatally flawed to get there, obviously that's not helpful. And maybe that's a defense mechanism. Maybe I need to believe that it's not for me so I don't have to feel bad about not having it. Well, I'd still say the feeling bad part is something God wants to fill up in you. Let life be what it is today. Embrace God in it. And then look for what's next. And maybe and a sense of God. I think the people who can be alone and not lonely are those that have a sense of God's purpose about their life in those spaces. And it's not a threat. It's not a comment on them. And it allows them to open the door. I think as someone said years ago on a podcast, we read it from a letter, I think, religion makes us relationally challenged. And that's true. Learning to live relationally with people. Because I had someone locally recently call me, and they wanted to know if I knew of any groups in the area. And I would say, well, there's people I know that are kind of fellowship. Is that what you – no. I need a group in which people can practice their gifts with each other. And I said, really? Well, what kind of gifts do you have? And we started talking about that. And what really one is we've learned that community, quote unquote, is where I go and force my gifts on other people, and they have to sit there and be part of it, whether it's a teaching gift, worship leading gift, prophetic gift, whatever. And we've – religion makes us use people in the name of fellowship. And when God wants to move us into a different way of living in his community, honestly, some relational structures in our life, for lack of a better word, get to be altered. And they get altered inside of a love relationship with the Father. I'm going to live loved. I'm going to find out how deeply loved by God I am. Then I'm not going to need you to fill up what's broken in me. I don't need you to be the victim of my gifts, if we'll say it that way. I don't need you to be in a meeting every week. And I tell you, most people around me who wanted to have a meeting every week in my times past are the people who least came to them. They like to know that they're there. So if they need it, they can check in and they can like to identify with that group. The people who are really on a God journey and really sharing life together, they don't need a lot of meetings. In fact, I don't find meetings helpful to growing relationships. I find conversations helpful to growing relationships. I find even fives and sixes and sevens and eights people just sitting around my home, sitting around a restaurant, talking. Relationships grow that way. I have a meeting in my home, a Bible study. And if we need a Bible study because there's things we want to learn and explore scripturally, great. But that's a meeting to learn stuff, which is really different than a place where relationships grow. And I even find in meetings, people get awkward. I've shared this a lot. You get around dinner table with people. I travel all over the world and get dinner with people. Active, spirited conversation. And then we move from the table into a room, open in prayer. Somebody does a few songs on a guitar. And all of a sudden, everybody slipped into meeting mode and all the energy has left the room. And it's not the same as it was before. And you go, well, how do we lose that? What happened to that? Meetings, this John Beaumont said this to me when I was in New Zealand. Fellowship ends when meetings begin. And I think that's true. Got a letter from Tim, too. He makes some good things. Some of the things I said about groupthink earlier, he talked about moving outside of that box. But then he ended up in just a very, very lonely space. And the loneliness was provoked by a sense that God's forsaken him. Or maybe God's forsaken him. And just if you know a little bit about his story, he went through a life-threatening automobile accident. And that crushed his hand in a way that no longer lets him be the musician he was for 30 years. So a life-threatening automobile accident, a change of vocation, and the community of musicians he hung out with changed. A divorce due to complications from the accident, extreme financial hardship from the accident and the divorce, the left foot of fellowship from an institutional Christianity, the physical relocation of the few friends that I actually have this conversation with, and in the midst of this had some prophetic dreams, and really felt like God was going to bring some things into his life that gave him great hope, and then in the time that those things haven't come into his life, he writes this, as regards your question about loneliness, the biggest challenge I currently face is not the lack of physical contact, but dealing with loneliness because I do not sense God's presence as I once did. I am assaulted by the reminder of a promise from God that he doesn't appear to be keeping. The silence is deafening, and I have no one I can talk to about this because I absolutely know no one who has ever experienced anything like this. And then he mentioned, I live about 40 miles from you, and I've, you know, I thought about calling but never do because I'd be too busy, whatever. And I'm going, call me. I wrote only bags to call me. If you want to come over here, we'll find a way to get together. I think part of having relationships is initiating them. And if you're in places of pain like this, I'll say this about God's promises. If it's a promise from God, he'll keep it. He may not be in our time. Remember, Abraham was promised that child 25 years before God delivered it. And the promise was meant to work in Abraham a transformation of life. I'm sure the promise at times frustrated him to no end, and he tried to fulfill it himself. And I mean, you know the story of Abraham going into a bit of a mess. But if God's made it, God will keep it. I've had things I thought God promised me, and I've got, you know, visions and dreams and things that affirmed it. I get down the road a bit and realize, you know what? That wasn't his promise. That was Wayne's projection, something Wayne wanted. And I think you can know that if you stay married to the relationship with God rather than get your eyes on the promise. And now the promise has got to be fulfilled at all costs. And then God's not keeping his promise. And my heart goes out to Tim, and I say, hey, call me. We'll spend some time together. I'd be happy to help you walk through this. Again, situations bring us into places where life's changed. If you just want it to stay the same, it just doesn't. If you're going to grieve over the loss, great, grieve it. But realize part of moving out of grief over time is beginning, to, what Pat said, to see what's next, to see who God's brought into your life, what joy is in this day, in this new situation. And it's easy to, all of us, and I think our country, America, does it well, creates this false nostalgia for a past of America that never really existed, but everybody thinks it existed. If we can just get back to the good old days. Religion does that too, often and always. And then you go through life-altering events, and you hope for something to happen that will make sense of all this and make it all worth it. And I what that takes us away from is waking up today and just saying, God, what's next? What are you asking me to do? Sue's story is a bit different. Since you invited us to respond with our experiences of loneliness, following Jesus on a more relational path, and what does that look like? Here goes, smile. Yeah, I'm Sue, who wrote about feeling sad, and you responded in an earlier podcast with encouragement. Since there are a number of us, I hope that this dialogue will reach others who need encouragement as well. Growing up in a very rule-based Presbyterian approach to God, not very, made God not very endearing. As he has gently clarified things been very gradual over the last 4 years. Loneliness for me has not meant less people. There have been more people to engage with because I'm invited to engage with others who are very far from the box I was in. For me, it has felt like I always giving away but not receiving. I'm passionate about encouraging people, so love that he has invited me to give myself away. I long for people where I can connect on a deep level with these conversations, perhaps in a situation more mutual. And I appreciate what's being said here. But I'm going to be honest. My observation in life is this. The people who end up in healthy relationships will give themselves away 90% of the time in which an invite or an engagement doesn't come back to them. Sarah and I, when we're together with people, 90% of the time we're generating that. And there's a lot of factors for that. Some people are just uncomfortable having folks in their home. I know for some people, since we didn't know anybody in this area until I was already like an author type guy, when people find that, they assume I'm way too busy to get together. And so, and have so many people pushing for my time that they're a little more reticent. So I realize there are factors that complicate that. But even with other people, it's the homes that are open, that are gracious, that invite people over. If you start worrying about how much you're invited back, and I get the desire for that, Sue, I do, that other people will connect in a mutual way, and it's not just you giving, it's them sharing too. And that, to me, that is community. Up till then, it's ministry. I get to minister with people. I get to serve people. I get to love people. I get to pour my life out, and I can do that because God pours his life into me. Community is when it becomes mutual. And I appreciate the fact that it's not there yet. I'd just say keep pouring out. Just keep pouring out. Maybe find this online for a time. But, you know, in time, I think you will meet people who for which the love and concern and care becomes more mutual, particularly if we're not focused on the kind of conversation we have. I want to have a God journey conversation about outside the box. No, the conversation we'll have about Jesus and who he is and how he's shaping our lives, whether or not they enjoy a congregational life isn't the issue. The issue is simply loving. And then later, Sue added this, the longer he walks me through this relational process, I become more deeply aware of how my wrestlings are shared by many others. For me to relax into what he is doing, his direction, his timing is something he's building. The word contentment stood out for me because sometimes I'm like a baby wailing and refusing to be soothed. The encouragement that I take away is, as he keeps me on this path with him, there will be greater healing over time, and there will be greater maturity in knowing him all in his time. I'm faced with what feels like uncertainty right now. How will he work out that balance between depending on him, the community, and his people? Well, I think the depending on him is, it goes there. And then it's celebrating that life with community. It's celebrating how other people get to engage us in that way. And Sue, I just keep doing what you're doing. Keep loving. I love the hope that springs in your heart. I may not have all I want now, but I'm going to see how he does that in the future. Sue, a different Sue, Sue C by email wrote me this. I'm thinking about your words on loneliness. I wonder if so much of what those on this journey are feeling and thinking is lonely is partially a lack of busyness. We are all part of a megachurch plant and all the work that goes along with keeping the machine going. It's ridiculously busy. We live 50 miles away and on certain days we went back and forth twice a day. And I was worship leader, a women's director, my husband was children's pastor. And aside from the painful way we were kicked out, we were in shock because suddenly we had nothing to do. So this is the pain of getting kicked out. That's one thing. But then she talks about this. We had nothing to do. And the quiet seemed lonely. And when I look back and really think about it, we weren't having great connections when we were busy. It was mostly superficial and quite honestly business-like relationships. We did mourn some relationships, but only until we faced the fact that they weren't true relationships. We didn't lose our real friends, only the ones that needed us to do something for them. And maybe we needed to do it too for our own people-pleasing needs. Now, 13 years out of it, I see that what felt lonely was really more of an emptying. I had no idea who I was until everything was stripped away, and I was just his daughter, and it grieves me now to think that I didn't realize how precious being just his daughter was. So that's the good side of this. I really think loneliness, I don't mean being alone, being in solitude, having moments where other people are around. I don't think that's a problem. It may be part of God's season. Loneliness, the pain inside points to something. What? There's a million things that could point to. I think the letters make sense of that. Not leaders, the letters. The letters make sense of that. There's lots of things it could be. But loneliness, like the what they call the idiot light on the dashboard of your car. When the oil light comes on, it means there's a problem. I think loneliness means there's a problem, not your problem, just something. I'm wanting something God's not giving me. I'm missing something He is. And the only way to know is to get in a conversation with Him and then find out as God empties that out, things really change in our life. And loneliness can be a significant part of our emptying. I like that thought. And Kent wrote this on the blog. I think the loneliness people feel, church people and unchurched people alike, stems from the same thing. Society comes along and offers belonging systems when God doesn't. Just seems to me that God's intent is to separate us from all that to where we find ourselves alone in the wilderness with God's presence until we learn to be at peace there with God as our only source. All of our external longing will remain misshapen, and we'll be attempting to scrape from others the things we think we need. As that transformation happens, we get inside God, we find peace in our life just as it is today, and we're not worried about what it isn't, what we hope it is, what it was in the past. We just live in Him today. Then the longer we need to scrape from other people or use them for something we think we need, those feelings of neediness just simply no longer exist. And with that gone, something really beautiful and astounding happens. The possibility of real, healthy encounters with others begins to open up. Good stuff. And I'm going to read this. This is from Ronell. I met her, actually, a couple of months ago. She says this: I have to say that meeting you was a divine intervention and being with the other people we were with. My girlfriend encouraged me to go, even though I felt like my journey was too new. Wow, let me tell you, that meeting opened my eyes to something I was not expecting at all. I went having recently decided to step down from women's ministry at a megachurch because I was constantly having a carrot of freedom dangled in front of me, but it was laced with control and conformity. I just knew in my heart it's not where I belonged. And prior to attending the meeting with you, I had discussed house church and some other new ideas with my husband, that he thought maybe I needed to just be still for a bit. And then the meeting happened. And I have to say, seeing all those people still struggling with control issues in house church was an eye-opener to the reality that man-made religious systems with rules will lead to frustration, irritation, and issues. I left that meeting with a sense of peace about not attending church and just exploring life with Father. Honestly, it did feel a little lonely at first. But as the weeks began to wear on, I realized that I had a phone full of numbers and the ability to invite couples over for dinner or girlfriends out to coffee. As long as Father was with me, He was in the conversation. This awakening to the realization that I need to make a connection a priority instead of having it manufactured for me in a building was vital to my soul. I'm taking this journey one day at a time, but honestly, I could not imagine a more beautiful picture of our family learning to navigate this together. Whether we are on the wrestling mats with our son in the dugout at Little League or all curled up in bed reading a book, I'm seeing the new eyes that all the busyness was stealing, these precious moments with the gifts that God has given me. Man, that's good stuff. I love how God's opened up that space, and I think He does it for all of us when we get out of this manufactured relationships, particularly if you think they're real, get away from that, feel the loss of it, and now something more real can happen in our hearts. You know, there's lots of things that loneliness can mean in our lives. I think that's the gist of all these letters and even counsel as to what to do about it. It may fit you, it may not fit you. Your unsettledness being alone right now may not be loneliness. It may be God stirring you to open up your life a little more, to engage people in a way you're not currently engaged people. If what you're doing isn't opening a door to what's in your heart, that's a conversation to have with God and sort out what may be next for you. As I look out at people who've gone on this journey, who've kind of walked outside the institutions where all the stuff is planned for us, it does take a little more intentionality on our side. I've said often, Sarah and I are always asking and praying. One of our ongoing prayer things is, God, who are you inviting us to walk alongside right now? And that's people we know, that's neighbors, that's people we want to know better who are near us. That's people we meet along the way and just say, hey, why don't we get together some night and find out if they want to. It's just to care about people that are in front of you and to engage them in things that help relationships grow if they're open to it. We've invited our neighbors over and some of them say, I don't know, you know, we'll do it sometime, and they put it off. And I don't badger them. It's a door. It opens. I may 6-8 months later just say, hey, we'd still love to have dinner with you guys sometime if you want to. If they don't take the bait, I realize not everybody wants to know their creepy neighbors. So it's not something you push, but hospitality, and Scripture talks a lot about it, hospitality is the way you engage relationships. It's opening your heart. It's opening your home. It's opening yourself to other people. As I said earlier, most people are waiting to be invited. Be an inviter. Be someone that's opening the door to relationship. I know a lot of fellowship happens, and this is one of the best things I get from traveling when I do it now, is we host a gathering, we get together. People, because I'm there, people come because they're God Journey listeners or live stream readers or read a book or want to meet me for various reasons. But they get in a room with 80 or so people, and over the course of a day or so, relationships connect. And people who are take the initiative say, you know what, I'd really love to get together with you again. Could you give me your email address or whatever? And people exchange email addresses. They find a way to get together. Relationships are something that grow out of intentionality. Most people don't have very many. Most people, it's all they can do to go to work and manage their life and be distracted by all the entertainments that our world offers, where you can just be alone. And there's a book a while back, I never read it, but it was called Bowling Alone or something like that. And it was how everybody used to belong to bowling leagues and was out doing things. And now people play bowling on their Wii at home and don't go out and watch TV and go to movies. And those are low relationship things. They are. And I'm not saying they're wrong. You can have some of that in your life. Not a big deal there. But if you're lonely, those things will help you be lonely. We are so distracted by time-wasting entertainment that erodes the core of our lives. And so being aware of that, again, these are conversations. No, well, I'm never going to do anything again. It's maximum entertainment. That's not going to do any good. But you have this conversation with God. God, are you wanting me to connect? How can you do that? One of the guys that I met this summer, it was last summer for them. It was spring here, but up in Kingaroy in Australia, Queensland. A man who just had it on his heart. He'd been touched by the Transition series. He got some CDs, and he just began to make copies of the Transition CDs at Livestream and gave them away to people. And anybody who would ask, he gave them away. He's made literally, I don't know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. I don't know. I was in his home. We stayed there a few days. This has just been a gift. This has touched me, and he's just been giving it away to people who want it. Not standing on the street corner, throwing them at people, just in conversation. And that's grown a bit of a community. Now, it's not an official church of any kind. I was there, spoke to that group over a couple of nights. It's a large group of people in this little town who are in a similar conversation. All of them don't know each other. Most of them know him because he got the transitions from them. And if they've touched them, they'll come and have a conversation about that. And here I think, here's just a wonderful way that God led this guy to share something that was free with people he could give it away to. And that put him in conversations with people about God's love, living love. And that's put him in conversation with people even in other communities who say, hey, can you have some of those for our community over here? And it's just this little thing, God, and I don't say everybody needs to give away transitions things. Well, obviously, there's so much more we could talk about in this whole zone. And your comments and emails up the road will kind of maybe give us a focus to come back and revisit this. What I am saying is this. God has a purpose in what's going on in your life right now. Find out what that is and embrace it. And God has a way, if he's ready to connect you to a wider community, there are lots of ways that your life can be given away, not waiting for other people to come to you. There's plenty of ways. If this starts on the internet in some blog comments, start there, great. The day will come because I believe God is connecting his people on the planet. Yeah, those of us that are kind of pioneers and trailblazers outside of the religious settings, we're living a bit of a different journey. It may be not as many people around these days, but out of that, I think it's God's heart to spawn a community of his people in the earth. So if you're feeling lonely right now, walk that through with God. Find out what it is. Find out what's next. Don't just respond with all the human need. You've got to fill up that space that feels lonely. Embrace it with him. Find out what's going on and realize you are part of a larger community over the whole world. Well, obviously, there's so much more we could talk about. Your comments and emails up the road will kind of maybe give us a focus to come back and revisit this. If we can just hold that loneliness, if it's there in our heart before God, and find out what's there and what's next, and embrace today inside of him, letting him fill up even those places that seem lonely, then we'll continue on this God journey. And the community God's building in the earth will continue. And you will find yourself someday smack dab in the middle of it.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.